Welcome to B2B Better, a podcast that exists to explore what modern-day B2B marketing looks like. If you work for a company with long sales cycles, has a complex value proposition, and simply pouring money into ads won't see you hit your growth goals, this is the show for you. My name's Jason Bradwell. Let's get into it. Hey everyone, today I'm excited to be joined by Fran Swartu, founder of Getting the Market, a company based in the Netherlands that specializes in positioning and online marketing for the maritime and logistics industries. I was really interested in speaking to Fran as a fellow owner of a creative services business and one that is so niche in its target market to boot. How does the company differentiate from more generic, we do all things for all people type agencies? What are the advantages and disadvantages to being so laser focused on this specific niche? And when you have become the big fish in a small pond, what comes next? How do you expand in a meaningful and sustainable way? To answer all these questions, Fran shared his insights on developing a personalized email campaign targeting new geographies and how he approaches validating a prospecting hypothesis through A/B testing. Finally, before we get started, I'd like to thank SoPro for sponsoring this episode. They've just published an awesome report, The State of Prospecting 2024, which offers data-backed, practical advice on how to optimize outreach in order to stay ahead of the competition. So I'm going to drop the link to the report in the show notes of this episode. Make sure you check it out. Let's get into it. So tell me a little bit about your story behind getting the market to market. Why did you found the company? And tell me a little bit about what you do.
My name is Frans Swartu. I live in the city of Rotterdam. And I think, as everybody knows, Rotterdam is known for being a port city. So in the past, the port and the city were one. Nowadays, they are a little bit moving in different directions. Yeah, living in a port city, then there's a large chance when you start working that you end up at a company that is port related. So I started working for an oil company, at first in diverse marketing roles for the gasoline stations. And later they asked me whether I could also have a look at their terminal and bunkering activities. Bunkering is supplying sea vessels with fuels. And the minute I set foot in the port, it was love at first sight. That was the place to be. And I was made up my mind pretty soon that my next moves would be in and around the port. And that is what happened after 6 years working for this company called Argos Oil. I decided to start my own business called Getting the Market. Yeah, when you start a business, normally you're just by yourself or with a couple of friends. In my case, I was all alone. And I thought, isn't it cool that I start helping companies with their marketing questions, marketing challenges. Yeah, companies that are too small to hire their own marketeer, but do have questions about this topic.
And tell me a little bit about the business today. You've been doing this for a while. What is Getting the Market specializing in? Who do you work for? And tell me a little bit about the makeup of that.
I am doing this since 2011. So the second person joined in 2016. So that was 5 years later. What we do is we actually do a couple of things, but the most important thing is we do a lot of positioning. So we always say, what is the use of running if you're running in the wrong direction? That's actually a Chinese proverb, which I like really a lot. Don't have a tattoo of it. So it's really vital in everything that a company does, whether it is employer branding or a general campaign, is really to sharpen the axe and to position yourself distinctively in the marketplace. So that is one. And the second part is that we are really focused on online marketing. So a lot of stuff that we are doing is online. So you can think of websites, web shops, some portals, and everything that is related in the online domain to drive traffic towards the website. We see a website as the central hub of everything a company does online. And yeah, there are a lot of things moving around to gain traffic to this website. And the last part, also really important, that has to do with content development and public relations. So we deliver a lot of content in different forms. As you can imagine, the port is really great for videography and photography. So that's an important part. And we help our clients to get those stories out there via public relations.
So public relations, content marketing, it's quite a lot. It's a saturated market, at least when it comes to competitors. I think what makes Getting the Market a little bit different is your specialism in the maritime industry, particularly in the Dutch market. So talk to me a little bit about why it made sense for you to really focus the business in that domain, and then what competitive advantage, and dare I say disadvantage, you think that has given you since you first started the business all the way back in 2011.
Yeah. Positioning is about making choices. So what you are and what you are not. We have decided to make a really sharp focus on maritime and logistics markets. So, of course, with the port in our backyard, it was, for me, quite a natural choice. And in the end, what you really see is that you start serving clients in industries that you really like. So that was a natural move. What is a strong advantage of this is that a lot of parties recognize us as one of the leading agencies within this field. So that has to do with positioning. So they say, okay, we like your expertise within our industries, and that is for us a big yes in terms of doing business with you. But that also has a flip side, because there are also parties that are saying, no, we think that you guys are too involved and that you guys are part of the problem, and therefore we choose an agency that is outside of the industry and really doesn't understand a lot about our business. Yeah, and then the fun part comes in. And what I said at the beginning of this answer is, yeah, positioning is about making choices. So we like those companies that say your expertise, we value that highly. And that is our sweet spot. And that is working.
I'm sure you probably have stories of customers or prospects who have come to you with the argument, you're too close to this, you're part of the problem. We're going to go with someone who's got a fresh pair of eyes, a fresh perspective, only for them to be then disappointed in the results in going with someone who doesn't have that deep-rooted expertise that you have at getting the market. I certainly recall a company I used to work with in the media sector. We built apps and streaming services for big broadcasters, think BBC, NFL, etc. And these kind of clients would come to us and they'd say, you do it for everyone else. We want to go with someone who does things a bit different. And they'd go to this other vendor, but that vendor wouldn't understand the scale that was required to build a solution of this magnitude and deal with peak traffic during sporting or political events or what have you. And they'd often come back and say, look, we just need you to help us fix this problem. You get it. You've walked in our shoes before. I'm sure you must have similar stories to this.
Yeah, well, we definitely have stories. So what we see is that sometimes companies do tend to choose really a hotshot agency. That later on in the process, they also involve us to get it done. And that's always the fun part, we say. And that also has to do with there are often limited resources within companies to make it happen. So, of course, if you hire an agency that does not understand your business, then you should make time as an organization to inform them and to get them in the loop, etc. So sometimes we are then hired later in the process to make it happen after all. And it's absolutely not that we then have a huge ego and say, oh no, now we're not going to do it. It's actually quite fun. And it also brings fresh perspective for us to work together with a different agency.
So talk to me a little bit about winning new business in your sector, because I think a lot of creative service professionals listening to this podcast, organizations that are in a similar challenge as you and I face when it comes to winning new business as a service-based business, what has worked for you historically when it comes to acquiring new customers? And how has this been impacted by this global economic environment that we currently find ourselves in?
And we are always really interlinked with the networks within the port. So as we look at getting the market until, let's say, 2020, 2021, we were a member of the right network collectives. And we tended to go to the right parties. So we knew a lot of people and we still know a lot of people. But it's really important that somewhere during your tenure in business that you try to come outside your comfort zone. And it's really easy to stay in your comfort zone and say, okay, now we're just doing this little game in the vicinity of Rotterdam. So we are really trying to get out of there. So we are addressing new market segments. So for instance, what you have seen since 2021, we really started focusing on shipping companies. So less on the terminals in the port. We started focusing on maritime companies. So those are companies that are servicing the maritime segment. So it can, for instance, be a company that is bringing personnel to wind parks at sea. And that is the fun stuff, because we have our story in place. They still recognize our DNA in terms of port/maritime DNA. And for us, the fun part is that we do new stuff. Because in the end, we are sort like, we are monkeys, huh? We can do a trick. But it's quite nice to do the trick in a new cage.
So you've got your core target market, your core ICP, and now you're looking, by the sounds of things, for these kind of adjacent verticals, adjacent sectors, where you can translate the experience that makes you so appealing to your core ICP, but in a kind of newly packaged way in order to grow and expand the business. And so I'm keen to understand how you go about identifying those adjacent verticals. Is it just industry knowledge, industry acumen, or did anything else go into the process of saying, okay, we're gonna expand in this direction or expand in that direction?
And that's a very good question. Actually, from the onset, it was a little bit more the logistics sides of business. And now we tend to move a little bit more to the maritime side of business. So actually, it's a sort of, it comes natural because we follow, it's always a little bit, a worn out word, but we follow our passion. And if you follow your passion, then you feel it. So that's always what we say. For instance, we always give the example of Unilever. If Unilever calls tomorrow for Magnum ice cream, then we say, sorry, we don't do that. We know that it fits in a container and that's it. And so you know where the next thing is. I cannot really explain it in that sense. We have more, if you're talking about this, we are really more focused geographical wise in terms of next steps than really going beyond the boundaries of industries that we have set at the moment.
What does that look like in practical terms? So if you're going into new geographies, how are you going into new geographies? What does that strategy, that program look like?
Actually, we have a sort of a vision for the future. So we want to be in 3 time zones. So we are looking. So first we had an adventure in Dubai. And that was a nice adventure. But we have decided that Dubai is too close to the Netherlands in terms of different time zones. So we are currently setting up, we're investigating to set up a second office in Singapore. And why Singapore? That's also a huge maritime hub. And from there, you have a large region of the world that we can service. And lastly, the third office, we think about Houston, because there is, of course, a large oil-related, it's a large oil-related hub. And of course, there's also a maritime hub. And then from the 3 time zones, we want to play the game that we are now playing just here in Rotterdam, because now we serve like the whole world from here.
So you've identified these new markets, and it sounds like there are plans to invest in some new locations or establish some entities in these new geographies. Talk to me a little bit about the kind of marketing and the sales strategy that you're using to break into those locations, into those geographies, because having the office space and having the presence is one thing, that brand awareness piece, but taking that positioning and that you've cultivated in the Netherlands, getting it in front of prospective customers in those new markets. Talk to me a little bit about that.
That is, of course, really difficult. And here comes email marketing into place. We are working with a supplier of a great email marketing solution. And they are able, based upon our input, to create a list of companies that we want to target. So we still see is, of course, online marketing can be really difficult with low conversion rates. But we have already tested also this solution in the European market, and we see really great results in terms of leads and also in terms of new customers. And we're more or less playing the same game over there. And what it is, it all has to do, I think the success of such email campaigns has to do that you really, A, try to make it personal. Of course, try to standardize, but give it a personal feel and make use of the right name drops. So we have some really great customers that are known across the globe. And if you can name drop those customers, then you will catch attention.
You touch on a really interesting point there between personalization and scale. And I think that's something that a lot of people like you and I, business owners and sales and marketing leaders who are tasked with going out there and building awareness and getting our names on the map, they really struggle with, because I'm sure you've been on the receiving end, as I have, of a lot of really crap outreach, really crap prospecting, which is trying to be personal, but it's just so see-through in its attempts. So I want to understand a little bit from you, your thought process around, okay, how do we personalize and how do we do that at scale? What does that look like?
It also has to do, I think it really has to do is become relevant. So what is the pain point that the other party might experience? And that should be a pain point that is in line with your positioning. So for instance, what our email is like, working with a generic marketing agency can be challenging. So that is the first sentence of our email. And then therefore, I would like to introduce Getting the Market. Since 2011, we have been specializing in transport, logistics, and maritime. We have been working for blah, 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 blah. And then there are some little Easter eggs in there that they think, hey, this is interesting. And the whole point with generic stuff, yeah, the generic stuff who do not have a clear sender, there are no contact details underneath the email. Yeah, it's all rubbish. And you don't even look at it. Or emails that are just services.
It's almost giving people a chance to self-qualify in leading with that messaging around, okay, working with generalists sucks. We are a specialist and we are a specialist in this. And if you're conveying that in the first sentence or two of your email, people can decide, okay, this is of interest to me or it's not of interest to me. And I would imagine because of the diligence that's gone into actually defining the target list up at the top, it's going to be relevant to the majority of people who are opening that email. Maybe they're not in the market at this point. Maybe they're not in a position to buy a service or solution from you, but they could be in the market next week or next month or next year. And so you're giving people the opportunity to self-qualify, put their hand up and say, actually, yeah, you know what? I've got this pain point. I do fit this profile. We should talk.
And once you really do it at scale, so we don't do it at a really large scale, but if you want to play this game at a really large scale, yeah, then of course, A-B testing is of vital importance. So we were lucky that we had a good hit with our initial setup. So that it was the right message. So we tested it within our network. So that was a little bit in the beginning, our A-B testing. But it resonates really well. And yeah, of course, now we're going to play this game also in Singapore and see if that market works the same or that we need to pivot.
So let's talk a little bit here about A-B testing in your network, because when I hear that, I think, okay, so you're talking developing messaging that you took out into your immediate network and said, hey, is there something... This is something we're thinking about putting out. Does this resonate? Is that what you're talking about here?
Yeah, that is what I'm talking about. So we had three or four different openings, and the majority was in favor of this opening. So it's not really like scientific validated way of A-B testing, but it's, yeah, for us it works. We are pragmatic guys.
I would think of it as the positive indicators. And I think that's something where sometimes as marketers, we get a bit wrapped up in thinking that we need a huge volume of data in order to make incremental decisions. I think when you're first starting out with a sequence or with a campaign like this, it's all about developing a hypothesis, which you did. We are the specialists in this, and we've developed a target list of people we think this is going to resonate with. And then it's about running quick, rapid-fire tests based on intuition and your experience in the market, and then just following those positive indicators, even if the volume is relatively small. And in your case, I imagine the total available market of potential customers is relatively small in the grand scheme of things. That shouldn't stop you from actually just going ahead, running these tests and getting the confidence in the results and just ultimately following that interest.
Absolutely. I agree.
So as we look at closing out the interview, talk to me a little bit about what go-to-market looks like for the rest of 2024 for Getting the Market. Do you have any other investments that you're making in business development and marketing?
Absolutely. So this year is really has everything to do with a larger focus on Europe. So we're really going also outside the comfort zone. And that is, in terms of business planning, quite difficult. Eh? So we're based in Rotterdam. We are also moving into adjacent countries. So you can think we are looking into Germany and the Baltics and Scandinavia. We will serve those parties from Rotterdam. So that is the whole setup. So we don't want to set up shop everywhere, but just say, okay, we are the specialist and we are based in Rotterdam. So that is really exciting because it also has to do with the resources within the company. Yeah? So it's actually, you need to get a sort of rhythm where your sales and your business development goals are in line and attuned with how fast you can grow your business. And that is our main challenge at the moment. So what we're already doing is putting out vacancies, have good talks with people, and trying to identify candidates which we can onboard the minute when it's necessary. So that's actually quite a nice and interesting game to play.
Absolutely. Franz, thank you very much for sharing your story today. I'm sure our listeners at B2B Better will be taking a lot away in regards to enhancing their prospecting efforts through personalization and scale. I'll drop a link to getting the Markets website in the show notes of this episode, and of course a LinkedIn profile for you as well. But otherwise, thank you very much for joining us on B2B Better. So joining me once again on B2B Better to unpack that interview is Kit Smith from SoPro. Kit, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks, Jason. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Good to have you on the show again. So Franz covered a lot of interesting points during that episode. The question I want to ask you is, what criteria should B2B organizations be prioritizing to ensure they're reaching the most receptive audience, especially when they're expanding into new markets, much like the way Franz has done with his business?
Yeah, I think obviously Franz showed a way that can work. Don't stray too far from your niche, at least initially. It made sense with them moving from, I think he said it was ports and terminals, into more shipping companies. And that I like to, he said, they still recognize the DNA, that an existing niche still carries some weight because you're in a related market. So yeah, I think that's a good place to start. But I think sometimes expansion opportunities, like sometimes they can be obvious to you, but sometimes they won't. And as marketers, obviously, we all fixate on our customers, rightfully, but it can give you blinkers, or it can create like feedback loops. You're looking at data that is only reflecting the people you're already targeting. And I know from speaking to SoPro campaign teams that they can spot gaps that clients miss. And obviously that outside view, I think, can be really useful. But then something with outbound marketing, one of the things that's useful with it is that you get results very quickly. So whether you're testing whatever different variables you're testing, job titles, industries, geographies, you can have a feel and you can quite quickly see what's working. And then I also think it's important to follow that through the pipeline. You don't just look at what's the results from your outbound marketing, but okay, maybe we get leads from this segment, but actually they don't convert that well, or we don't get many, but they convert really well. So let's make the most of that.
Yeah, it's definitely a balancing act. And what I found interesting was this idea around developing a hypothesis, particularly in industries like the one that Franz is targeting with his organization, which is so niche. There's never going to be a huge amount of volume of data that you would expect to see in industries like FMCG or productivity software or this kind of like wide berth type markets. And so developing a really clear hypothesis based on your own intuition, your own understanding, and then setting really clear kind of benchmarks and milestones around, okay, if we're going to run this activity, this program, and we hit these markers, we have the confidence to continue investing in the campaign, is a really, it's an art, it's a science, and I'm sure something that you help a lot of your customers do over at SoPro. Another thing that you help your clients do is you help them figure out when they should be sending messaging to their prospects. And so how do you, something we talked a little bit on the episode with Franz, how do you determine the perfect time to connect with your prospects when running a program like the ones you help your clients run over at SoPro?
Yeah, I was thinking about this recently and the kind of difference between inbound marketing and outbound. And like with inbound marketing, it's the right time because they've come to you, right, with a need, they've searched out something. But it is difficult, or it can be difficult, to reach exactly the right people. Or certainly you might catch a lot of other fish in your net. But with outbound marketing, they're the right people because you've done that targeting, you've built that list, but you don't know necessarily that they're in market at that time. And yeah, what I think the kind of really important thing is to build that campaign, they're the right people, and you then bring in the activity that results from that campaign. So you look at kind of buyer intent signals and any data that you can get that kind of shows an interaction with it. And when you can see people, obviously there's the obvious ones of responding and saying, oh, this looks interesting. But if you can see someone going from your messages to your website and then they're looking at specific kind of pages like pricing or case studies or something, it's a fairly good indication that they're actually in the market at that time. And we know that in the state of prospecting report and the survey that we did of B2B buyers, 88% of people said they want to be contacted. But obviously you want to be contacted at the right time. And yeah, I think those signals are key to making sure, okay, they've done something. And then you can start to personalize the rest of the campaign based on the activity that they've done. So you're not only at the right time, but you're more relevant as well.
And when you start running these experiments, start running these tests, you naturally start falling into the world of A-B testing. And this is something that Franz was talking about in regards to the messaging they were using as part of their email campaigns. And what's SoPro's view on the role of A-B testing in cold outreach? And how do you run an effective A-B test when you don't have a huge amount of data available at your fingertips?
Yeah, it's always going to be a problem with A-B testing, like not having a huge amount of volume, because it's going to make you slightly less sure of the results. But nonetheless, A-B testing, yeah, very important in cold outreach. And I think you and Franz hit the nail on the head. He was talking about, well, we start with our what we know of our internal market, and then we can test within that with the different kind of outreach templates for just for that market, see what resonates better. And then when you get the results back very quickly, as I said before, and there's so many different things that you can test as well, you know, if you're just talking about email, subject lines, opening lines, all sorts of different things within the content. And you can find those incremental gains. So yeah, it can be challenging not having the data. It's not like peer-reviewed, published scientific research, right? Like you said, you already know your audience, you've got hypotheses, and you test within that. And then you see, hopefully, the data kind of starts to build a picture that kind of gives you confidence in something that you already believe to be true. And then, you know, you pick a winner, you move on, you keep testing.
Just to cap off this part of the interview, Franz talked about this idea of personalization at scale. And we've talked a little bit about this in previous episodes, where I think some folks' interpretation of personalization is putting in a kind of first name tag into the email and then otherwise running with a kind of consistent generic type message. And there are better ways of doing it. You and I both know. And so what is your view? What's SoPro's view on how do you achieve effective personalization at scale through email prospecting?
Yeah, I think, first of all, we'll park AI for a second and just say, like, so there are two like main paths, I think. One is segmenting your audience, and the other is personalization in the way you just referenced with kind of names and stuff like that. So with segmentation, like Franz talked about this, you can be relevant to the industry, you can have pain points, you can name drop previous clients that you've worked with that are relevant. And so then that makes your email relevant to and personalized to them as a company. And then those personalization elements, yeah, if you do it well, there's all sorts of things, not just name and industry and job title. There's all sorts of stuff that you can add in. And that then starts to make it feel relevant and personalized to the individual. So you've got both coming at it from both angles. And there is something to be said of just that how well you can use those elements. Everybody has seen emails where they've put in your company name and it doesn't quite scan correctly or something. But yeah, done well. I think it works really well. And then I was thinking about personalization. But one of your previous guests, Nick from Storm and Shelter, talked about increasing personalization as a prospect goes through the journey. So that from that first reply to your message, further engagements on different channels. And obviously, as they go through the kind of sales pipeline onto pitch and proposal and stuff, personalization just ramps up as they take those steps through the journey. But yeah, and then maybe we should talk about AI if we're talking about personalization. I think you have to be very careful about how it's used. And you can't just tell GPT or whatever it is to write you an outreach email. Like, it's not going to fix everything. If you start with an understanding of what great personalization looks like, and then you build on top of that. So we've been testing in our sort of internal campaigns, we've been testing this, but we've got that sort of 9 years of history of knowing how that works. And we've got that 9 years of a data set to train it on. And then you're writing kind of complex, multi-layered algorithms and testing and all sorts of fail safes. And then again, it goes back to A-B testing. So we've just been testing that against our kind of other more traditional outreach, and the results are impressive. But that kind of isn't the approach that a lot of people take. And I think when you see it in your inbox, basically bad manual outreach has been replaced by bad AI generative outreach. And it sticks out just as much as the old stuff did. It gets the response it deserves.
Just that there's far more of it nowadays,
yes.
It feels like.
Yeah, it's a lot easier for anyone to do. But yeah, it's not some panacea for personalization. It's still, it's its own beast with its own challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. Kit, thanks very much for coming again on to B2B Better. We touch, or SoPro touches on a lot of these topics: personalization at scale, A/B testing, differentiated messaging, perfect times to reaching out to prospects, all in their latest State of Prospecting 2024 report. It's a great read. I highly recommend you check it out, and we will drop a link to it in the show notes of this episode. But Kit Smith, thank you very much. Until next time.
Thanks, Jason.
And that's it for this episode of B2B Better. Thank you so much for giving me your time this week. If you are a repeat listener, thanks for coming back. If you did take any value out of this interview, please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review in your podcast platform of choice. It really makes a huge difference for an emerging creator like myself. Ugh, that sounded so bad, emerging creator. But I'm going to stick with it because we're here. If you want to learn more about the services at B2B Better, you can visit my website, www.b2b-better.com. A huge thanks to my guest this week. See you all next week.